AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money, but are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, if I could save time in a bottle. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Polkabon.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And today...
Yes, Joe?
We're going to do a little bit of meta-analysis about what it means to talk about the future. Because on this podcast, a lot of times, you know, the theme is the future, but really that turns into... Well, here's a scientific question that will be answered in the future, or that we're currently answering now and we'll know the answer in the future. Or here's a technology that may become more prevalent or change the world in the future. But what about the passage of time itself? What about when we turn our attention to the changing of the guard from the past to the present to the future? And that's at the heart of our topic today, which is going to be historical preservation.
It's going to be a two-parter, guys. We realized that we had really quite a lot to say about this, and we've already done a few episodes on the future of the history that we are creating today, because every day we create a new history for ourselves, or a new little blip in it.
Yeah, isn't that a wonderfully depressing thing to think about your life?
You're
just leaving little drops in the ocean of history.
I think it'd be more depressing to think I wasn't leaving any drops in the history.
That's really? True. Although those days when you're like, man, today I cataloged my perfume. You're welcome, future.
You know, isn't it funny that we want privacy from the people who are alive today, but we want the people of the future to know everything about us?
Dude, do you not notice how many public posts I put out on Facebook? I'm like... Look at me. So of course I want to be in all the history books of the future.
That's why you never shut your curtains.
It's also why I never shut my mouth.
Do weird stuff.
Yeah, you know, I like to live out there is what I do.
Okay, so other than Jonathan's open curtains,
right.
We have talked on this show about what the ruins of today's society might look like.
Sure, yeah. Our friend Christian Sager came on the show one time to talk with us about that, about what the buildings that are out there today are going to look like in 100 years or 1,000 years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can find Christian Sager on a show called Stuff to Blow Your Mind Now with Joe McCormick, who we are sitting in the studio with. So if you want to tune into that podcast, you can. We also did a couple episodes on how we can preserve the safety of nuclear waste sites in the future.
Yeah. Very
the
important.
Answer is poorly, as it turns out.
Well, mostly because of difficult political and cultural issues, not just the physical limitations.
Right. But today we wanted to get more into some of those physical limitations of preserving actual objects. We wanted to talk about the future of historical preservation, how we can make lovely, important cultural objects last, you know, books and films and art.
Sure. So this is a problem because objects on Earth tend to deteriorate. We witness it in our own bodies through the process of aging. We witness it if you're a homeowner, you know, you see the condition of your house deteriorate over time.
This episode is just going to continue to depress me. There's both an old person and a homeowner.
But Jonathan,
yes.
There is hope because there are steps we can take that we've discovered through years of technological development to stay the advances of time.
Right.
To hold back the creep of decay to make the things that we love last long into the future.
And to be fair, we also have a greater awareness now. As our modern sensibility is such that we are starting to realize more within our own time the importance of things we create. Whereas if you look at ages past, often the things that we hold up as the artifacts of the past were the utilitarian stuff or in some cases the works of art of people who weren't necessarily thinking, how can we preserve this so that future generations will have access to it, right?
Yeah, I mean,
sometimes they were, but lots of times it was just kind of the ephemera of the day.
And
we're interested in it, but
yeah. How would you have known back then?
Like, sure.
Who's going to be interested in this pot?
Right.
sure. And so although it is scientific that things fall apart, it is also scientific that we can kind of help them hold together a little bit here and there. And this might be of weighted interest to the three of us sitting in this room because we are all writers and storytellers. And so we have a especially vested interest, I would say, in preserving that kind of culture, including our own. But it's a, you know, it's a huge field and it's one that's largely invisible to the general public because if a conservationist is doing her job really well, you never see it. You just get to continue enjoying the lovely objects that she's working with.
That's a really great point. I've heard a similar thing said about like the directors of movies. The movies that have really great direction are the ones where you don't say, I'm really noticing the direction. But yeah, let's jump right into it if you guys are ready. I'm curious, like, let's say there is a beautiful oil painting.
Okay. There's a beautiful oil painting.
There's a beautiful oil painting hanging up in your house because you stole it from a museum.
Speaking my language.
Right. And you're like, okay.
Me and 10 of my friends.
I know I can love this painting better than the museum would.
Yeah. What? It belongs out of a museum.
Right. What would you do to protect this painting, to make it last 1,000 years, to make it last as long as you possibly could take it into the future?
And this is something where we've developed the techniques based upon years of various collections and museums, learning the best ways to take care of these often priceless artifacts. I mean, you could argue you could put a price on them, but they're astronomically priced. So.
Well, also most of the people who created these things aren't around anymore.
Right.
So you can't just ask them to.
Like, hey, can you touch this up?
Yeah. Or like, hey, could you just make another?
All right. Do you still have the exact paints that you used to create this masterpiece?
Like, hey, get to work on this Forrest Da Vinci. We're really lacking.
I do know the guy, but I don't know. He's kind of busy. So there's certain rules that are going to come up again and again as we talk about different types of stuff we want to preserve. And it shouldn't come as a surprise because, like Joe was saying, the stuff on Earth does degrade over time. There are very few materials that we have that are going to withstand the ravages of time, even if you are taking the best of care with that object. Ultimately, stuff does tend toward entropy. They break down.
Yeah.
But if you are trying to extend the life of something like an oil painting, first keep it out of sunlight in particular. Don't expose it to a lot of light in general.
Yeah. Have you ever seen these scenes in a museum where somebody's trying to take a bunch of pictures of a painting with a flash camera and they say, no, don't do that.
Right. Or even older buildings. Like if you go through Europe and you are walking through, you'll see in castles, you'll see in churches, cathedrals, that sort of stuff. Even ones that are no longer actively being used, they'll say, don't use flash photography.
Yeah. And UV light is the worst, ultraviolet light.
Yeah,
in general, but any kind of light, you know, is going to start deteriorating some of the pigments in those paints and other materials.
Right. It can cause oxidization, which ends up, it'll make stuff fade or change color. Ultraviolet light in particular does this. And when you think of something like incandescent lights, which most art preservationists say is the best of the choices right now, maybe LEDs, but we still have to do a little more research to make sure. But incandescents tend to be the safest because they emit very little ultraviolet. They do emit some, but it's not much compared to, say, fluorescents, which do much more. And so you don't want to have those or halogens necessarily near your paintings. And you definitely don't want sunlight hitting those paintings because otherwise you're going to get these effects, including things like the paint drying up and flaking off or cracking, which you've probably seen if you've looked at some older paintings that have been around for a really long time.
Yeah. Somehow I guess it would also be a bad idea to aim an X-ray machine or something producing gamma rays at your painting.
Well, only if you – I mean, obviously if you want the subject within the painting to turn into the Incredible Hulk, which would be amazing.
I thought
with a pearl earring would be phenomenal.
You know, we've had to make this point several times on this podcast, but I'll say it again. Gamma rays don't give you special powers. They just kill you.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Right?
It's unfortunate, but true.
Yeah, pretty much any way you would get a superpower in a comic book would be to some degree fatal in the real world.
Okay, but I'm sure there are other environmental conditions that matter.
Absolutely. Temperature and humidity, the two big ones. You want the temperature to be cool, so probably around the 65 degree Fahrenheit range, because anything warmer than that.
That's kicking up my energy bill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know.
I guess I stole a painting. I got to live with the consequences.
I mean, if you don't care about how long it lasts, go ahead and, you know, knock that back up to like 78 or something. No, 65 degrees Fahrenheit. The reason being that paintings are made up of a multitude of materials, right? It's not just canvas. There's the frame. There's all this other stuff. And all of those materials will expand at different rates when exposed to warmer temperatures. So if it is exposed to fluctuating temperatures, so, you know, the temperature goes up and down multiple times throughout the year, this creates a constant stress on the painting and decreases its lifespan.
You're going to get more flaking of the paint or more separation of the chemicals in the paint or et cetera, et cetera.
And if you have a painting that's on linen, for example, linen can expand in heat. So you may have sometimes seen a painting that had looked like a fold in it. Like it was a little, it looked like the frame might be too small, that you needed to put it in a larger frame to stretch it out. But you should absolutely not do that, because if you were to do that with a linen painting, once the temperature goes down, then the material would start to try and pull away from the frame because it was trying to move back to the shape it was before it expanded in the heat. So you want a nice, stable, cool, relatively dry, but not too dry environment. If it's a humid environment, that can mean that you could have mold growing on your painting, which is not good for the longevity of the painting. If it's too dry, it can make the material eaten by mold.
Yeah. It's bad for things.
Rule of thumb. And unless you're Swamp Thing, in which case it just adds mass. And then if it's too dry, it can make the material brittle. So you have to have this kind of very delicate balancing act, which is why museums and other collection areas, like you'll see things encased so that they preserve a particular relative humidity to keep the material in good shape.
Yeah, and you can imagine that the invention of digitally controlled HVAC systems has greatly assisted in this over the past decade or so.
Everything from the actual control to the sensors so that you have a very good idea of what the temperature and relative humidity are at any given time, so you can make those minute adjustments or even have it programmed in as an algorithm so that it maintains that relative to the environment so that, you know, you have the ideal conditions to preserve that material.
Okay, but here's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that the conditions in which we store our priceless works of art, like if, say, there's an oil painting that comes from the Renaissance, we're probably better at controlling those conditions and taking care of it today than we have ever been before.
Yeah, the Italian Renaissance HVAC systems were crap.
Exactly right. So if you had an oil painting from the Renaissance hanging up in less than ideal conditions for a long time, and it deteriorated, it became damaged, it degraded over that time. Is there anything we can do now to try to restore it to its more pristine state?
Oh, classically, we would try to restore paintings physically by either applying more paint or trying to remove areas of damage, or even just like gluing little flakes of paint back on as they kind of fell off.
What?
And as you can imagine, those are very permanent ways of dealing with an artwork, because you can't go back once you've added more paint onto something. That's basically it. You've changed it forever. And so it's considered unethical these days generally to do that sort of thing.
Right. The extreme case is you can't un-ecce homo.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if you don't know what that is, that's a reference to a failed restoration job.
I'm nearly positive that if you are on the internet right now, you have seen it.
Yeah.
So you know, your options at this point, if you have a damaged work of art, are either to like live with it being damaged, put it in a closet and never display it again. And I don't like eat it, like just throw it away. But no, I mean, and you know, none of those are really the preferred way of dealing with something that you want to keep and enjoy. But there are some things that people are doing these days to more safely and gently restore paintings. There was one collaborative project that was presented during the 2014 meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, usually called the AAAS. Which is a lot. It's kind of easier to say. I don't know. Anyway, this project was restoring paintings for display by constructing highly detailed color correcting light arrays to be shown on the paintings. So, okay, we've already discussed how light can be bad for paint. Well, there were these five paintings specifically that were being studied, hung in Harvard's Holyoke Center since the 1960s. They were Mark Rothko pieces, which are these lovely abstract expressionist kind of things. And he had happened to use a very light sensitive red pigment in them. In just a few decades of being hung, his crimsons had faded or changed to light blues, not what he originally intended. So this team reconstructed faded photographs of the original pieces and then built a compensation image that could be projected onto the paintings pixel by pixel to color correct for the areas that had been damaged. And these are huge murals, like 9 feet tall by a bunch of feet wide. They all depend, but so they can be displayed again and hopefully out of UV light and with, with these particular arrays being as gentle as possible on the remaining paints.
Yeah, just as long as the room raiders don't come in and try to. Isn't that what they do? They've got that UV wand and they wave it over everything. They try to, oh, is there filth here?
If it, fingers crossed that no one's doing that to too many of our priceless works of art. But okay, so in this case.
You might want to know if there's filth. I don't know.
If I have a priceless work of art hanging up, just let it be filthy.
Yeah,
just
there's a point where you just say, like, all right, this I will allow.
Yeah, you know, like I'm not going to put my eyeballs on it, so I'm not really that worried about its particular cleanliness.
I apologize. Please proceed.
It's okay. It's okay. so we So this was a great project, but the restoration was done by basically looking at these restored photographs, these, you know, color corrected photographs used to make color corrected light arrays. But we don't have color photographs of every original painting on the planet. I mean, Rembrandt was a total slacker about photographing his paintings. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, none of that camera obscura for him.
Mm-hmm. So other teams are using scanning technologies to learn about the interior composition of paints in classic works and then digitally reproduce what they would have looked like. For example, electron spectroscopy can reveal the molecular composition of paints and even the damage that has been done to a painting can be used in order to help reconstruct it.
Oh, what do you mean?
Oh, one researcher by the name of Joris Dick from the Delft University of Technology in the Netherlands was studying the oxidation patterns on Vincent van Gogh, a.k.a., since I just said a bunch of Dutch things relatively correctly, Vincent van Gogh. That's sort of close anyway.
Yeah.
Really? That's how you say it?
It's van Gogh.
I've said it wrong my entire life.
Yeah. Yeah. And with a kind of FV at the beginning of van Gogh. Van Gogh.
Yeah, that's true.
I say it like a baby describing a scene on the street. Van Gogh!
Joris, our good buddy Joris, was studying flowers in a blue vase. And he used micro X-rays to scan and record the distribution of this gray crust that had formed on the painting over time due to one of the yellow pigments that Van Gogh used. And then he was able to 3D print a reconstruction of the original surface texture and color of the painting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
I love this idea of incorporating new technology to preserve the old stuff. I mean, the idea of both the lighting of the former painting and then using 3D printing to try and replicate something that had, I would have just assumed had been lost to time, is really phenomenal. Really cool ideas for preservation.
Yeah, and that makes me think of another area of preservation that might not be as obvious as that of the oil painting. Because when you think about something like an oil painting, there you're dealing with at least probably some organic ingredients, things that are more likely to just obviously deteriorate over time. Mm-hmm. But what about film?
Synthetic materials.
Yeah, well, this is an area where I think a lot of people would be surprised to learn how perilous the idea of film archiving and film storage is, because we have lost tons of films.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's been beaten into us since childhood. Those of us who certainly grew up in the 70s and 80s, I would say that you know, plastic is forever. Plastic doesn't go anywhere.
It turns out, that's not entirely true.
It's only true about the garbage that kills ducks.
Yeah.
The films, on the other hand.
Films about ducks being killed by garbage. Very ephemeral, as it turns out. No, they film is perishable plastic. Film will degrade over time. It will rot, and it just eventually dissolves until you no longer have something that will hold an image at any, you know, anymore.
Yeah. In fact, there are even classic, well-loved, well-respected films that do not exist in any entirely undamaged state. They've had to go through restoration projects where people go through the film and try to patch it and clean it up.
Yeah.
And these are for films that people care about.
Oh, no. There are movies where there's no longer a master print. And the closest we have is a kind of a hodgepodge of
a copy of a restoration of a copy.
Right, where you would end up saying, well, the first reel was mostly undamaged on this print, and the second reel was mostly undamaged on this print, so we started to kind of splice these together to make a Frankenstein print, perhaps of the movie Frankenstein, so that you would be able to watch the whole thing in as good a quality as possible. So here's another thing, is that we were talking about how in ages past people weren't really aware that the stuff they were creating could one day be considered art or important, and therefore there wasn't this need for preservation.
Yeah.
Same thing's true with the film industry.
Absolutely the case. I think especially in the silent film era, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, like early films, I think a lot of them, the people who were taking care of them just didn't have an eye towards permanence.
Well, yeah, even if you, and this extends well beyond the early days of film. If you watch any documentary about the comedy group Monty Python, they talk about how their original tapes were being held by the BBC, and I think it was Eric Idle who went and purchased them from the BBC because they were scheduled to be taped over. The BBC was using the same tapes that they had used to shoot. They had done it before. The company had done it before because they had shot stuff before that had been – that's why we don't have copies of a lot of the early Doctor Who's. They were taped
over.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing is that at the time you thought, well, this is something we show. And then after we show it, like there weren't necessarily thoughts of syndication or keeping it around for any reason. There was no home market.
Right, right.
So there, it was kind of in the same.
No need to reproduce it. We aired it once. I guess that's it.
It's kind of like, going to see a play. You're like, well, it was meant to be seen at this one time, and then once the play is over, then it's over.
Strike, set, move on.
Exactly. Yeah. So if we look back at the earliest films, we have only about 20% of the movies produced from around 1910 to 1930 in complete form.
Wow.
So 80% of the movies completed then we either have completely lost or we only have partial prints.
Now, do we know what percentage of that was people taping over it? It's like, I need to make Harry and the Hendersons and
well,
here's some film.
Well, with film, you can't do that.
Oh, you're totally right.
Yeah. It's not magnetic tape. It's actual film where you've...
Well, you can tape over it, but it would produce really interesting images.
Once you've developed it, it's done.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
You would be able to do multiple exposures before developing it, but yes, and people did. But about half the features produced before 1950 exist in a complete form.
Wow.
So we've lost half of those. There's no telling how many short or independent films have been lost over time because no one was really paying much attention to those at all. So there could be countless ones that we will never see again. They don't exist. So one of the important things, actually, the film preservation relies on three basic steps. The first is to print old film onto new film stock that's designed to last longer than the old film. So the old films, the glycerin stuff, that needs to be transferred to different types of film that can last longer. That transfer process obviously is very meticulous, and you have to be extremely careful or else you could end up corrupting, getting, you know, a bad copy.
Basically.
Yeah. You could end up really causing some severe damage.
Here's another thing. What do nuclear waste and film have in common?
Salt mines.
They've both been stored in salt mines.
Yeah. So
for protection.
Storing the original film and master copy in a cool and dry place is absolutely necessary. So, it's like we were talking about with paintings. You want it to be in an environment where the temperature is nice and stable. It's cool. No moisture if you can help it. Salt mines, great place to put these things. And there are tons of films being stored in salt mines. In fact, there's one called the Hutchinson Facility. It's in Kansas. And it is the largest storage facility for movie and television film and has more than 1.7 million square feet of space. That's about 158,000 square meters. By the way, they have a website. So if you want to store something for, you know, posterity's sake, you can actually look into it. They have a link and everything where you can look and see. Probably not going to be cost effective unless you're also like an enormous television studio, but I didn't go that far to look into it. So the third part of preserving film after, you know, the storage and the transfer to a stronger form of film is providing public access through copies of the film. So you've got a lot of societies and organizations that are dedicated to preserving film. And in every case I came across, one of their major points was that they had to allow for public access. Otherwise, you're just storing something. You're hoarding.
Like the bureaucrats at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Top men.
Yeah. Which,
the sequel to Top Gun.
Yeah.
It was a little more straightforward.
It was. Not as many Mavericks in that one. All right. So here's the thing. I was looking into this, and preservation of a single film is not cheap. According to the National Film Preservation Foundation, in 2010, if you wanted to preserve a 7-reel black and white silent feature film, which is just a standard length silent film, it would cost $18,115 for that one film. And that's just the transfer process. That's without any restoration work. So if you need to do any restoration work, that would add obviously to that fee. If you wanted to make a digital video copy of that so that people could actually watch it, because obviously if all you have is the master print and then the copy print, people are not going to be lining up at the salt mine in order to get a look at this movie. So if you wanted to make it available by creating a digital copy, that would add another $3,000 to the total. And keep in mind, that's the process for one silent film. If you wanted to do a feature that had sound, it would cost more because mm-hmm. there's more information that you have to preserve. And so you have to be even more careful and meticulous in the process of transferring it over into a new form of film. This is non-trivial. It is difficult and it's expensive. And if you don't do it right, then you lose it.
Sure. Now, I think with movies, there are two different levels of preservation to talk about.
Yeah.
One of them would be preservation of the film at, you know, the way it was intended to be seen. At its, you know, on the original type of film, at its peak level of quality.
Against a screen that literally has silver woven into it to have that reflective capability.
Well, I mean, not necessarily, but, you know, preserved in its pristine state.
Mm-hmm.
What about the possibility of films that essentially still exist, but not in a very good way? Like, what if there's a film that you can only find through a VHS copy?
See, now this is where we bring up my rant about the movie, the cheap B-movie horror film that I was in, Blood Salvage.
Yeah.
As the example I use. Yeah, because Blood Salvage, I mean, I honestly don't know what the status is of this movie in the sense of I don't know if anyone owns the print anymore. I don't know where the print is.
So it was shot on film. It was shot on film.
It was shot on film. Yeah, this is before digital video was really a thing. Mm-hmm. Shot on film.
It seems like everything's digital now.
Well, yeah, this was done back in the early 90s. So yeah. Shot on film. And then when it came to making a home theater version, a lot of people say, well, home theater, that's kind of an act of preservation. Not really, because it's dependent upon whatever the medium is that the film's been committed to, right? So in this case, VHS tapes.
Well, I mean, yeah, but clearly the type of media that we watch things on in our homes never changes.
Yeah, it changes so fast, and that's the problem, right?
That's why I still watch everything on Betamax.
And that's, boy, I can't tell you, I cannot wait for Star Wars Episode 7 to come out on HD DVD. There's so many formats that either fail or they just become obsolete because some other more, you know, superior format comes out.
Though they can always mount a comeback for nostalgic or irony based.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No.
I do love VHS tapes. Like, I'm not saying I think they look better. I'm just saying they're fun. It's fun to hold a VHS tape of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 in your hand.
Yeah, if you're Joe or you live in Brooklyn, then obviously there's a big
That's
appeal.
That's important, yeah.
No, I agree. I still own VHS tapes, although I don't have a VCR that works anymore. But the tapes still sit there. That's a big problem. That means that you no longer have access to that media. You may still have the media itself, but you don't have the access to what's on there.
Yeah, I've got a friend who keeps a bunch of laser discs handy just because it's funny. He doesn't have his laser disc player hooked up.
Yeah. I mean, I can completely identify with that in that there might be an emotional attachment to the physical form mm-hmm. there.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Whether mm-hmm. it's, whether it's serious or not, there can be a real, kind of sentimental attachment to this stuff, but it doesn't mean that the art itself is accessible.
Right.
And as much as I'm joking about Blood Salvage in particular, like I said, it only ever came out on VHS and it only came out for rental companies. So it was never intended to be purchased for the home. In fact, if you ever looked up at the price, it was like $99 because it was just meant for rental facilities.
Yeah. And I can imagine a lot of things surviving like this in the digital age where what we end up having is a fairly low quality compressed file version of a movie.
Yeah, in fact,
it exists digitally. You can make as many copies as you want. You're not really scared about losing them.
Right.
But it's not what it originally was.
It would be like you got a picture of someone's Polaroid photo of the Mona Lisa. That's what your version of the Mona Lisa gets to be from that point forward, because that's essentially what we're talking about here. So, for example, if you really, really wanted to see Blood Salvage, you could go to YouTube. It's actually on there, the whole movie. It's a terrible transfer. And it's also got a different title because it's under the UK title, which I think is Mad Jake. So if you really want to see it, it's out there, but it's not the experience that I would want it to be. So that is one of the things we also have to keep in mind, is that it's not just preserving the media, it's preserving the way we access that media.
You were in a movie with John Saxon?
Yes, I was.
I just looked it up. You never told me.
Evander Holyfield was also in that. As was Ray Walston.
Wow.
My favorite Martian.
All right.
Yeah.
Mr. Hand?
I'll tell you all about it later on.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway, really, really important to, again, stress that it's not just the media. It's also the equipment we use to access it, because that's going to come up again later.
And so I think we're going to end there for today. But
yes.
This is not the end.
No.
It is never the end, except for those bits of film that we lost forever. Sorry, bits of film.
No. It is not the end, because this, as I said, is just part one of our two-part episode. So be sure to tune in next time to hear the second half of the story.
Yeah, and if you guys have any suggestions for future episodes of Forward Thinking, whether it's something similar to what we're covering today, or just, you know, whatever you are wondering, like, what is that going to be like in the future, send us a message. The email address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com, or you can drop us a line on Twitter or Google Plus or Facebook. Twitter and Google Plus, we are fwthinking. Search for us on Facebook at fwthinking, and we will pop right up. You can leave us a message, and we'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.